Are you ready, kids? Get your parents' permission, check your mailbox, and grab your shopping cart. It's time for the Adventures in Collecting podcast.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Dave.
Welcome to Adventures in collecting,
where we talk toy news, culture, and hauls,
along with our journeys as collectors.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Adventures in Collecting.
Hey, everybody.
We're back, Dave, and you know what? We're just going to keep the wrestling figure juices flowing with today's episode, coming off of our last interview with Mattel's Steve Ozer. So we have another guest today, Dave.
Yes, we do. And we shouldn't bury the lead at all. I think we're beyond burying leads.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. Today's guest has helped raise awareness of and has brought Japanese wrestling figures and other merch into the lives of many. He is currently working on bringing the Sofubi Pro Wrestling Series 2 line to life. Welcome to Adventures in Collecting, Junk Shop Dog himself, Adam McFarlane. Adam, welcome to Adventures in Collecting.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, fellas.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We're super excited to add another country and in fact continent to our list of places we've interviewed people from. So thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Yeah, I'm glad. You know, these time zones actually don't work too badly. I'm sitting here mid morning and very proud Australian here.
Awesome. So before we jump into the meat of the interview, we ask all of our guests that come on the show, what are you currently collecting?
Well, I'm actually sitting here pretty pleased with myself from a Japanese figure perspective, in that I've pretty much collected every Japanese figure I badly want. Just finished my 1960s Bullmark collection, and I've got a full set of poppies, so I'm pretty content. However, the hunt never ends, so I'm currently chipping away at a loose Hasbro collection of all things.
Oh, nice! Very good. I mean, that's a rabbit hole. Dave, you have quite a few of those yourself.
Yeah, mine are all my old ones, though. I wouldn't say they're certainly collector grade, but I still have all my, or if not all of them, most of them, of my childhood ones. But I always say, like, especially when I see your Instagram page, like, it's. The danger of jumping into the Chara Pro and Poppy realm or Poppy realm is just something that I see and I'm like, oh, I always want to dive in, but I'm just not quite sure where. So, you know, you are quite literally a world away from us here in New Jersey. So what's the collecting scene like there?
It is basically a world away, I think you'd say. There's a really high thirst and demand for current wrestling figures. Basically, the rarer or the collector's edition and most of the standard Mattel releases, you know, do fly off the shelves from your big box stores. I guess we're not as fortunate in that we don't have as much of a history in wrestling figures. LJNs were massive. Hasbros were big, but the releases were not, it was not a complete set put out here in Australia. So there's fond memories without there being a lot to find in secondhand stores, flea markets, you know, op shops. But I think there's a small but... small but tight collecting community. It is mainly centered around the American lines, however.
Yeah, I mean, we follow a couple of other toy bloggers on on Instagram, obviously, and there's actually one that we're pretty familiar with out of Australia, Aussie Toy Recon. And they always show these pictures. It's like, you know, we don't have Toys R Us and we don't have like toy stores anymore, really, like big box toy stores. It's only toy sections in places like Target and Walmart. And every now and then they'll post a picture of like these amazing just like aisles of toys at, you know, some big retailer, and I get misty eyed over it.
Yeah, it's a bit of feast or famine, really. We do have some cool toy shops, but I mean, it's we don't get the same volume or amount of wrestling releases that you guys do in the States. So I know a lot of collectors down this way do tend to scrape and claw and do whatever they can to get, you know, particularly the legends or the retros or whatever they have to go that extra mile to get them.
So speaking of collecting and collecting habits, what brought you into the world of figures like the Chara Pros and Popey figures?
Well, I actually was at one point trying to collect Hasbro's Mint on Card, and was going through any means necessary to acquire them, and happened upon some Japanese sellers that had some really dirt cheap carded Hasbros, and I think, you know, those sellers started to drift onto eBay, and you know, a lot of those Hasbros ended up being sold through there. But prior to that, there was a lot that were able to be found relatively cheaply. And from there, I did start to see these Japanese figures that I'd not seen before, and that being the standard Kara Pro line. And, I mean, particularly for those of us that do love Japanese wrestling, both modern and going back through the years, there were a lot of, you know, a lot of gaps filled in your collection. You know, an official Great Muta figure, you know, a bunch of Inoki figures, you know, Bruiser Brody, Abdullah the Butcher. There was this line that covered so many different facets of Japanese wrestling with a whole bunch of crossover. So after, you know, I grabbed a few of those for myself, and going through some Facebook groups and talking to other collectors, it seemed like there was somewhat of a thirst to have these figures in their collection. And at that point, a lot of people weren't familiar with ways to get them outside of eBay. So we were just trying to bridge that gap ourselves, you know, help our own collection and help out a few collectors as well. From there, and I think, you know, a lot of people were, I guess, somewhat aware of that Hulk Hogan Poppy figure. You know, digging a little deeper and seeing this, you know, this soft vinyl Poppy line, and I was just fascinated by the 10 wrestlers that were in that line, the colours, the card with the bright pink, just everything about it I found so fascinating, and was lucky enough to finally get my hands on one of those figures. And I was, you know, as much as you can be with a piece of plastic, I was, you know, just spellbound. And the collection and fascination with Poppy started there, and that was, you know, a couple of years before you know, we started to release our own line.
So, you know, you mentioned before, like, how you guys were collecting and you'd be helping other collectors. How do you come into the figures and collectibles that are part of the claim sales? Because I know that's the claim sale has become almost the biggest way that these get into everybody's hands.
It's just a matter of, I guess there's a couple of ways to go about it. We were finding there were people and websites where they were, you know, getting rid of their collections or selling in bulk, which was not really a sought after way in Japan. As you would know, space is you know, at a premium in Japan, and a lot of people weren't prepared to buy big lots of figures because they wouldn't have the room to display them all. And as a result, there were, you know, there were some absolute gems in those lots that we were prepared to, you know, buy those big lots, you know, and piece them out. And that was something where we'd, you know, if it was a big enough lot, we were even prepared to go on an auction site or whatever. So I guess it was just, you know, getting those contacts over there and finding ways to, you know, uncover toys that had been sitting in toy shops and wrestling shops over there. And I guess, you know, making that connection between the Japanese speaking sellers and the English speaking buyers.
Yeah, I mean, there is something absolutely captivating about those figures. Like, there is a certain charm to them, but I think part of it too is seeing them on card. Like especially when, you know, you were posting pictures of like really crisp mint, you know, versions of those figures with like clear bubbles, and like you could tell that they were very well cared for. Like, you felt like you were, like, even, you know, on our end, just kind of scrolling through our feed, like your eye is immediately caught by one of those figures.
Yeah, and it's funny because the Kara Pros in particular, the bubbles and cards are really flimsy. So as you say, that you can tell that they've been very well looked after. And I mean, some of those had never left the store. They were basically, you know, consignments from, you know, old wrestling stores where they never got rid of, or, you know, they were bought by someone who, you know, left them in a box for a couple of years and, you know, subsequently we picked them up. So I guess it is a reflection of how careful and delicate Japanese people are with their and other people's belongings as well.
For sure, for sure. And I mean, you mentioned that this initial interest and, you know, bridging the gap for collectors, you know, bridging that kind of like language barrier and everything, eventually led to the creation of the Sofubi Pro Wrestling Series 2. How did you go from, you know, selling these classic figures to, you know, a niche part of the community to making your own?
Well, it had been in our heads for a little while, and I say, you know, a couple of months. We went to Japan, and, you know, we saw these, you know, not just wrestling as in Poppy or Medicom soft vinyl, but just seeing all the different types of soft vinyl and, you know, just being fascinated with the decoration. I always did feel, without, you know, making that link to actually doing it ourselves, that it was a real shame that the Poppy line did only have one series. And I guess we were just trying to think of, you know, new ways to go about our business. We were really fortunate in the sense that we already had a relationship with Mrs. Barbara Goodish, the widow of Bruiser Brody. So when we did think, oh, hey, let's give this a go, he was the perfect topic in the sense that he fit in perfectly with the time frame. We knew that he would suit the aesthetic, and after a bit of back and forth with Mrs. Goodish, we did discover that all of the other Japanese figures with him on, all of his Japanese figures to that date had no royalties paid. So in a way, we could right a wrong in that regard as well. You can always dream big, but we weren't sure that it was ever going to go past a first figure. So it kind of started there, and it was only after we released that figure that we thought, well, you know, let's aim for five, and now it's gotten to a series of 10, with just that one released figure.
So you mentioned that you had a relationship with Bruiser Brody's widow, Mrs. Goodish. How did that relationship, how did you guys start that relationship?
Well, it happened a couple of years prior. I just heard her talking on a podcast. I knew that that we had some mutual friends both in America and in New Zealand, which is where she's from, Dunedin in New Zealand, as is my wife, Portia, who's the other part of this junk shop dog team, and we were living in New Zealand at the time. I just reached out to her just to say g'day and talk. And we would talk from time to time, and that's, around the time we decided to, dive headfirst into this figure project, I just put it to her, do you know these figures exist? What can you tell us about them, being the Cara Pros and the Medicoms? And she said, oh, I've never actually seen them before. I've not been paid for them. And that's when I put to her, well, how about a project where you do get paid? And it went from there.
So now, one of the coolest parts of this project thus far and that first Bruiser Brody figure was the silver variant. I got it. It's awesome. I love the representation of the chain in the figure. Will each release have that limited variant? And then there was other merch that came with it, like pins and shirts, or that went along with it.
No. So not every figure will have a variant. I think with the contract and royalty discussions with some of the Japanese talent, as well as the fact that the variant wasn't taken up in Japan, I think there's not as big a thirst for the variant figures over there, particularly in the silver style. So there will be some. That's not to say that there won't be variants of the Japanese wrestlers. We do want to keep it somewhat special. We don't want to do one of every wrestler, but we can say that Dynamite Kid will have a variant. We can say Terry Funk will have a variant. And there will be one other wrestler in the line further down the Series 2 track that will have variants, but they may be limited to Japan.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, the idea of getting into variants for these legends, really, I mean, they've had so many different iterations of ring gear and... especially if you're talking about somebody like Terry Funk, and a history of the Char Pros doing like bloody versions. I mean, they're the kind of you have a lot of options to play with for sure.
Yeah, that's right, and it does give us the opportunity to give hardcore collectors something that they're gonna lap up and enjoy, but as well, there's also that aspect of offering ring gear that is obscure enough to warrant a variant, but may not warrant a full release.
We now know that there are 10 wrestlers coming. What's the plan for releasing these? Are they going to be kind of individually kind of staggered, or are you going to release them as a wave? What's the plan?
Well, obviously a lot of it's dependent on the progress of the production. Where these are plans not 100% set in stone, but at this point, our next wave, undoubtedly our next wave will be Dynamite Kid and Bull Nakano. So they'll be sold together. Still not a firm release date, but we are hoping to have those in our hand in the next couple of months. That'll be followed by a bumper release of Terry Funk, Road Warrior Animal, Road Warrior Hawk, and then the final release of the series will be Giant Baba, Tiger Mask, and Great Sasuke.
Now, will Hawk and Animal be single cards, or will they be as a tag team?
They will be single cards.
Yeah, I mean, just hearing the names of all of the talent all at once, like, it's It's just you have so many, like, even for somebody like me who admittedly, like, my knowledge of Japanese wrestling personally is, it goes nowhere near as deep. I'm a novice, but like I recall, you know, like somebody like Bull Nagano for example, like I remember when she was wrestling in the WWF, you know, in the early stages of like their women's division, and like, you know, with the tall blue hair, and she was so intimidating, and like you look at her now and she's like a semi-professional golfer, and you know, like, it's just she's almost, well, not almost, I mean she's unrecognizable compared to her in-ring persona. What was it like working with somebody like her to create this this figure?
Oh, well, an absolute honor, really. And that you've kind of pinpointed how we want to go about making these figures. We want it to be an accessible line for both Western and Japanese collectors. So we do understand there are going to be some figures that may not appeal as much to Westerners as they do Japanese collectors, and there'll be some that don't appeal to Japanese collectors as much as Westerners. But we feel, at least in the first series, that there's a pretty good balance in terms of crossover, in terms of name value. I mean, even Tenryu, Great Sasuke, you know, both wrestled in the WWF. Giant Baba, you know, had his fair share of matches in the States. So we think it's a good mix, and we are really thankful, you know, to our friends in Japan at Haoming. Not only did they stock the Bruiser Brody figure, and they'll be stocking our future releases, but they've also helped us, you know, be that go-between, you know, both in terms of contact and in terms of the language barrier in dealing with those wrestlers. But to a person, all 10 wrestlers, it is an absolute honor, and you know, it's quite mind-blowing that we are able to release figures of these people. But I guess, you know, just going back to another one of your points there, making it accessible, hopefully for us, gives Westerners a chance to see who these people are and that they may have heard of, and maybe, you know, get on the YouTube and have a look at, or get on New Japan World, or, you know, see who these people are and see them for the great wrestlers that they are. And some of the matches, you know, particularly, you know, from the 80s and 90s are just phenomenal, featuring a lot of these wrestlers. So, you know, it's never too late to get into Japanese wrestling, and we hope that in some small way, you know, we can help people, take a look back at the history of Japanese wrestling and maybe make fans out of them.
I think between this toy line and, you know, and honestly, like the timing couldn't have worked out better for you, because you had this latest season of Dark Side of the Ring as well. Especially with the Bruiser Brody episode, introducing people to kind of a part of wrestling that I think I don't want to say, you know, forgotten, but a part that is not as well known as some of the other mainstream stuff. So it really is incredible what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and for me, like, I'm thinking automatically, like, okay, the posability of Dynamite and Tiger Mask, like, that was, like, huge. And I think they wrestled here, like, by us at the Garden back when I was very young. So, you know, just thinking of stuff like that. I think Sasuke did the initial light heavyweight tournament.
He did, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, and then Bull Nakano was wrestling Alundra Blaze. So, I mean, like, everybody's been here. So, yeah, definitely that bridge between, you know, for everybody in the West, everybody out here in the U.S. is totally there, and it's definitely accessible.
Yeah, and that's the aim. And look, we get that, you know, there are going to be some more obscure releases, and hopefully by then, at least there's the investment emotionally in the line that people are prepared to give some of the, you know, more obscure wrestlers a chance.
The figure announcement process has been a lot of fun to watch. And you said how you worked a little bit with Barbara Goodish. But what's it been like working with the talent or their families as far as everybody else goes?
It's been fantastic, actually. It's in the sense that the people that we've been working with have become friends of us in the process. I honestly don't feel like it's these tense business style negotiations. It's predominantly been people that want to prolong the legacy of that wrestler in question, particularly when those wrestlers have passed away. I mean, obviously we have Dynamite Kid coming out in our next release, and to deal with Bronwyn Billington, who people have gotten to know through Dark Side of the Ring subsequently, we've become really good friends as a result. And that's, you know, obviously you want to do well and be successful, but I mean the most, you know, heartwarming part of this is the fact that we have been able to make so many friends as a result, both in the States and Canada and in Japan as well. And that goes for the collectors as well. People that drop us a line, we've gotten to know, you know, wrestlers, collectors. It's been pretty amazing the amount of friends that we've made, you know, going through this process.
You know, from our perspective as, you know, two toy bloggers, it's been a whole lot of fun watching you go from, you know, having these regular claim sales and, like, you know, texting each other back and, like, sending stuff to our friends. We're like, look at this figure. Like, oh, my God, a Bob Sapp figure. You know, like, looking at these things that we haven't seen in a very long time. Or in some cases ever. I mean, every time that Zandig figure comes up, I'm always like, ooh. But you know, seeing it go from that to you creating these figures and, you know, and having these announcements from, you know, from the talent, it actually is like it brings joy to us too, because it's kind of like watching one of us level up, right? And you know, it's been great watching it. Like your joy definitely comes through, you know, what you're posting on Instagram and stuff. So it's all of that's very, very obvious.
Oh, absolutely. And we want to make that's very much one of our aims, is to make people feel like they're along for this journey with us. Obviously, with some of those names, you know, you have to pinch yourself, you know, that you're working with them, and you know. Hopefully I'm not giving too much away, but when in our inbox arrived a, you know, video from Terry Funk, for someone like me, that's, you know, that had me in tears, you know, just the joy and excitement of and he was very funny. But that you know, it's as someone who I hope I'm someone that respects the values and the history of wrestling, to have Terry Funk saying your company's name and working with you, it's surreal. It's crazy. So hopefully, as you said, you know, the people that follow us and have followed us for a long time, the people that we talk via, you know, via instant message on Instagram and Twitter and everything, hopefully they do feel that. And we want people to be excited for us, because, you know, we're just as excited, you know, as that Terry Funk moment, when people start to get the figures, well, that, you know, makes us, you know, just as happy, because people are enjoying them and it's something new and different. And, I could go on forever about, you know, how cool this is, because, there's just so many facets to the joy that we're getting out of this, I guess you would say, to sum up.
Yeah. And especially somebody like Terry Funk, who's just, you know, the original person who's reinvented himself so many times over his career. You know, whether it's from the like retirement match with the Forever speech, or, you know, even, you know, the deathmatch stuff in Japan, like
coming back as Chainsaw Charlie.
It's just like, yeah, there's so much stuff to kind of cull from that it's, you know, the possibilities are endless.
Let's just say that you've mentioned Dark Side of the Ring and you've mentioned Terry, and let's just say we're not done with Terry yet.
All right. Oh, that's good. So speaking of excitement and things to come, have you kicked around ideas for a series 3 yet, or will the next run of figures be based on another line, another form factor?
No, the Poppies themselves are far and away my favorite figure line. This is definitely our love in terms of figures. I don't think we'll be moving away, at least initially. Yes, we are planning the series 3. Yes, we have got some names on paper. Yes, we're very excited about some of those names. So we want to keep doing this for as long as people are interested in the figures. Obviously, we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves in terms of, putting them out, and yeah, we do want to put our money where our mouth is, and, you know, we do want to show people that these, you know, these figures are fair dinkum. But just to give you a little bit of insight into the process, it can take, you know, 6 months to a year to fine tune a figure down to getting it in our hands. So that hopefully explains why there's been such a long time between the Brody release and Dynamite Kid and Ball coming out, is simply because we weren't that sure that Brody was going to do well enough for us to justify continuing. Now, it absolutely has. The downside of our, I guess, caution is that there's so much of a gap between the next couple of figures. Now, hopefully we'll never have to do that again in terms of wait that long. So the aim is to have, you know, staggered figure releases every, you know, 3 to 4 months. And ideally that will continue into, you know, you won't have to be waiting a year for a series 3 or anything. So basically, once we've got the 10 figures into production for series 2, we want to start working on production for series 3. And hopefully in the not too distant future, we'll start naming those wrestlers. And we haven't got a full set of 10 yet, but we're actually pretty close in terms of the planning. And
wow.
Yeah, and we do believe that some of those names are as big, if not bigger than what we've already got.
Now, I don't want to pressure you to spoil anything, but continuing with the kind of trend with the 10 that you know are in series 2, are these going to be wrestlers that have never been featured in this style of figure before?
Yes. Predominantly, most of these guys will not have had a Poppy figure. Obviously, Terry's been the exception thus far. And yeah, there will be guys that will appear at a later date that may have been featured before. Obviously, there's no pen to paper there, so, you know, don't take that as a given. But we do see there being some of the original Poppy figure wrestlers, be it in a similar style or maybe some other wrestling attire. We do see them popping up at some point if we can make this series as successful as we hope.
Awesome. So actually, before we hit you with our last question and wrap up this interview, we posted a story and sent out a tweet collecting, asking if our followers, our collective followers, had any questions for you. And we do have we have three for you. So one question is directly from a specific person. And then the other two, we got a few questions that were very similarly worded. So we just kind of smushed them together to make two questions out of it. Dave, do you want to hit us with the first one here?
I do. At TheBerg511 asks, are there any figures that didn't exist when you were a kid that you are determined to make as an adult?
Ooh, that's a good question. I guess it's a bit tricky in the sense that we found this love of Japanese figures at a later date, and because it's kind of our niche, it's our pigeonhole, we're more trying to cover that. So, and I don't know, I've mentioned various aims that we have through this series, but another one is making sure that there are, you know, there are wrestlers that didn't get a figure for whatever reason and they are covered off. And I think you'll see that a little bit in series three. There's a couple of names that are almost over the line that absolutely it's a crying shame that they didn't get a figure. And you'll see them in figure form in series three. In terms of stuff from our childhood, I guess it would have to be some sort of side project because we weren't massive wrestling figure collectors as kids. So there might be some gaps in the market later on, but they wouldn't be wrestling related.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean we're not all it's not all wrestling figures all the time here with us either. So, you know, it's we're a little bit of Star Wars, a little bit of Marvel Legends, we do the NECA stuff, we do some of the Batman stuff, G.I. Joes, so you know, it's we're a little bit all over the place too.
Yeah, Funko, yeah, which is like everything. So
yeah. Well, and that's it. I mean, you know, if we were to branch off and this is just, you know, spitballing and pipe dreaming, it might be something, you know, probably outside of wrestling and something maybe a bit more related to our location being Australia.
Interesting. All right. Okay. Our next question is a combo question. So we got a bunch of questions about this. Are there any shipping challenges you face coming out of Australia?
Absolutely. and I think, look, I really appreciate, well, we Portia and I really appreciate that people have invested in this line, because we do understand that, you know, people are paying that additional cost of postage. I mean, for a Brody, it's, you know, it's $29.99 for the figure and $16 for postage. So you're paying, you know, an extra 50% worth of postage. And we get that there's no getting around it, but we also appreciate that people are prepared to go that extra mile to do that. But yeah, there's obviously, there's that side of things, and look, we're exploring as many ways as possible to bring it down as far as possible. The good news is going into the Bull and Dynamite releases, I'm not sure we can bring the cost of one figure postage down at all, but what we can do is bring the postage of two plus figures down. So if you get Bull and Dynamite, we think that it might be around the same cost as getting one figure sent. So hopefully that'll be, you know, music to the ears of international collectors. I mean, the States is a challenge. The UK is even more expensive. And some of the other areas around the world, these guys pay a lot of money to get these things sent to them. So we really do appreciate that. And I guess the other thing is, we have got you know, on the broader side of things, we've got a real appreciation for what figure stockists do in terms of getting these figures to us to start off with. So basically, to give you some insight, the figures, once they're ready and packaged and boxed, do take another 6 to 8 weeks to get to us from China. And that 6 to 8 weeks is absolutely excruciating, to be honest. And we totally get why, retailers like Ringside Collectibles do what they do and why they charge that extra money. It's completely justified because, yeah, it's so much difference, something taking a week as opposed to taking 6 to 8. But obviously with the volume that we get of these figures, it's not justifiable to charge people that extra money, and I guess we just have to be patient. But hopefully that gives you a bit of an insight into how nuts it drives us when, you know, knowing that the figure's ready to go, but we've still got to wait another 2 months to put it out. And that's part of why we're a little bit reluctant to put that release date out for Bull and Dynamite, simply because, you know, we want to make sure it's on the boat before we say anything.
And, you know, too, I think that's where having a little bit of a gap in between the releases, I think that might actually help, you know, because it is, to your point, you know, you're spending almost half the cost of the figure itself to ship it out, to somewhere like the United States. And when you have, first of all, a product that delivers on the promise that it makes, which is, you know, what you totally did with the Bruiser Brody figure, and, you know, we're both sure that trend is going to continue. But, you know, when you have the gap in between the releases, it kind of gives collectors time to, like, you know, it gives their wallets a chance to refill, if that makes sense, right? You know, having the releases a little bit more staggered than something like, you know, like WWE Elites that are like every month, or you know, even what Jazzwares is doing, like, you know, it's relentless. It's nonstop, and it's kind of always happening. This is clearly a more, you know, kind of specialty product anyway. So I think having that gap might help with that shipping quandary.
And I'll say this too, we're in a new golden age as far as wrestling figure collecting goes. You know, something like this, like supporting this line for me was a no-brainer, just because it's kind of one of those, where else are you going to get this? Like, this fills in a gap. And it's a gap we're not getting in any other form or fashion. So being able to support like this, something like this, no matter what the shipping cost was, for me was just like, yep, I'm in.
and that's that, like, don't get me wrong. Hopefully the product does make it a no-brainer for people, but we do appreciate the lengths that people go to. And we understand that not everyone has a whole bunch of money to spend on wrestling figures, you know, every month. So it's good to know that, you know, the gap between releases does give people a little bit of time to recoup, but hopefully we can keep those gaps a little shorter just so people don't forget about us.
All right, and Dave, do you want to hit us with the last question for the Q&A here?
Sure. Do you have any plans to make a wave of more modern talent in the classic form? And, you know, I know you were hinting at stuff for Wave 3, and it definitely got the wheels spinning over here for sure.
Oh, I think I wouldn't say there's plans. There's definitely been discussions, and even to the point where there were some modern talent that we had spoken to. I think it's something that we will see at some point. Not that we're necessarily the same kind of figure, but we're very much a niche product like a Medicom, and they've released wrestlers from all sorts of eras, and we're thinking we don't want to limit ourselves, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I think I've said in the past that there's no real restriction in terms of who we do. We'd just like to have them look like they did when they wrestled in Japan. So the only thing is, if they've wrestled a match in Japan, well, that's good enough for us. And we'd like to have them look the way that they did when they wrestled matches in Japan. The more, obviously, we have in mind some modern names that would suit that, that, that were big names in Japan or even are at the moment. So yeah, I think it's a never say never, and I think it would be part of the evolution of the line to start to incorporate some more modern names as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because just thinking of the idea, like you know, we this has come up a couple of times on the podcast, but in the past, where it's kind of like what's old is new again. Mm. But seeing like some of these other product lines, whether it's you know, whether it's Mego bringing back their clothed 8-inch, you know, action figures from, you know, the 60s and 70s, but making modern characters like from modern horror movies like Hannibal Lecter and, you know, Leatherface in that style, and seeing like a modern character in that style is really neat. Or even, you know, back when the retro, the Mattel retros were initially out, it, you know, seeing somebody like, you know, a Roman Reigns or a Bray Wyatt in the style of those 90s and or 80s and 90s Hasbro WWF figures was really neat. So like just thinking of the idea of seeing some modern talent in this style could be a fun experiment.
Absolutely. And hopefully, you know, much like the way that we're trying to with people like, pardon me, with Ball, you know, trying to give her a figure when she absolutely deserved one, you know, back in the day. Maybe there are some wrestlers that, you know, may not be plentiful in terms of their figure releases, or at least, you know, putting them in an attire or a look that that people have never had access to.
Now, I actually have another question before we go to the last question. The carding was iconic on the originals. It's iconic for Series 2, but I know you mentioned being a fan of the Hasbros, and those had a tendency to change packaging. You know, think of the different card colors. Do you see yourself staying in the pink color scheme or adapting something where it's like a different color for each series?
Very good question, and absolutely something we've talked about, but I'd be lying if I said we'd made our minds up in terms of where we're going to head with it. I know I'm pretty confident that Series 2 and Series 3 will stay with that pink, and much like the Hasbros, they stayed with that blue for at least, I think it was up until Series 5,
yeah.
Off the top of my head. So, yes, there's absolutely discussions on whether we should, you know, change it up and have a bit of fun with it. Not yet, but we may do later down the track.
Well, with that, that comes brings us to the end of our Q&A. And would like to thank everyone for submitting their questions. And Dave, it's time for you to ask the last question.
Yes. The last question to all of our guests. What is your favorite and or strangest piece in your collection? It can be one of each, or it can be both.
I might give you one of each. My favorite piece is a giant Bubba figure made by Bullmark in the 1960s. It's special in the sense that it was the first Bullmark we got our hands on, which for mine is the first wrestling figure series. I bought it in Japan. So it was part of our travels, Portia and I, traveling to Japan and seeing a bunch of wrestling and, you know, buying soft vinyls. So it has a lot of sentimental value, as well as being the first Bullmark in a figure that that I've since completed. That's a damn good question as to the strangest. I don't think we have any left, But the IWA Japan soft vinyl figures are probably some of the strangest that I've seen, in the sense that they're basically monsters, science fiction monsters, that had a very short run in IWA Japan, which most people would know as being the promotion that that had the Kawasaki Dream tournament with Terry Funk and Cactus Jack in the mid-90s. But they've sort of stayed alive since, and they had this very odd run of figures that I can send you some images of once we get off the chat that... they just don't seem to belong in a wrestling collection, probably the strangest things I've ever seen.
I just Googled one. I found a Chupacabra one.
Yeah, yeah.
Wild. I would not think in a million years, Dave, I'm going to send this to you now. I would not think in a million years that this was a wrestling figure. I would have thought it was something out of like Ultraman or
absolutely.
Or even like he almost looks like a Gamera villain.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
But the joy of being able to, you know, buy these big lots of figures is there's some really strange ones that pop up. We've got a Stan Hansen figure that you know is real soft vinyl style in the sense that it's a fluoro orange with a metallic blue paint. There's girls' dolls of female wrestlers from the 2000s. Beauty Rhodes, we've got one of those of the Kaneko Man. Anime figure that was so heavily based on Dusty Rhodes. That there is some really unique things that are made in, you know, small quantities in Japan, you know, being the home of soft vinyl in particular, that, you know, you look at it once and you just think, oh, you know, why was this sold? How was this sold? And how can I find one?
I think I have to call out one of my favorite lots that you had posted. I'd have to scroll back to find it again, but I think you had, I want to say they were a Jushin Thunder Liger, like claw machine.
Yeah.
Like plush figures almost. That was weird. Those were weird looking.
See, when you initially find a whole bag of them.
When you were initially saying monsters, I was thinking of like when Corporal Kirshner was Leatherface in Japan. But like, I wasn't expecting like Chupacabra. That thing's awesome.
It's almost a, you know, that on steroids. And sadly, a lot of those those guys never did get figures. You know, the Crypt Keeper and Leatherface, but you never know. Maybe down the line, if we can get enough interest.
Well, I think once you get into that that like the niche within the niche, right? That has like a Comic-Con release written all over it. You know, some super limited, you know, kind of thing.
And of course, I almost forgot to mention the homeless Antonio Inoki figure. He dressed up as a homeless person to raise awareness for homelessness in Japan, which is a really large problem. But he's a real champion of that cause and gets out there and raises money and you know, gets hands-on in terms of feeding the homeless. So there is a Kara Pro, and it's a great figure of him in basically a homeless costume. I don't know if you can say that, but that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would be one thing if he was wearing the costume as a gimmick, but the fact that he did it to raise awareness, I think we can call it a homeless costume for that. Mm. I think that's fair. Well, listen, it has been absolutely awesome having the opportunity to chat with you, Adam. Before we let you go, let us know where can we find you online?
For sure. Obviously, our biggest outlet is our Instagram, at junkshopdog. It's the first place where we put announcements. We've still got a few bits and pieces that we're clearing out as we make the full shift from vintage to our own figure line. And we'll try to, you know, put some cool pictures of our both our releases and pictures of the people that we are releasing, you know, through their careers as we shift away from that vintage. But it's Junk Shop Dog on Twitter as well, and Junk Shop Dog on Facebook. So drop us a line if, for whatever reason, if you want to talk wrestling figures, if you want to ask us questions about our line. I can't guarantee we can answer everything because some stuff's a little bit confidential. If you're looking to get into collecting Japanese figures, we're, you know, even if we can't fix you up with Kara Pros anymore, we're more than happy to help with as much information in what is a very fun rabbit hole to jump down.
Adam, thank you again so much for joining us. And everyone, be sure to keep an eye out for release dates.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Thank you, dear listener, for hanging out with us today. Subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen, and then tell your friends to do it. Thanks also to Joe Azari, the golden voice behind our intro. Our music is Game Boy Horror by the Zombie Dandies. Find more about them both in our show notes.
Follow us on social media at AIC_podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Stop by and say hi, show us your toy hauls, and share your toy stories. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Don't try this at home. Void where prohibited and some assembly required. Each sold separately, not a flying toy. Consult a physician if your toy run exceeds more than 4 hours.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.